low income, high income, doesn't matter. Everybody should have access to be able to start saving money on their electric bill.
Less than half of U.S. households could host a solar array, and many more can't make the finances work. But Community Solar is unlocking an opportunity to bring solar to everyone. In this episode of Local Energy Rules, John Farrell speaks with Julia Nurbin, Executive Director of Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, about her efforts to bring equal access to solar energy via Minnesota's innovative Community Solar Garden program. This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
Julia, welcome to Local Energy Rules.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
So Minnesota's recently launched community solar program offers any Xcel Energy customer, which covers about half of those folks in Minnesota, the chance to purchase energy from a specific solar array instead of from the electric company. It's hugely popular with enough proposed projects to make more than double Xcel's solar energy requirement by 2020. What makes community solar such a potent tool for a faith-based approach to fighting climate change?
Great. Well, faith actors, of course, are very concerned and very excited about making sure that they do their part in reducing the carbon footprint. And so people have been excited about solar for a long time. Unfortunately, a lot of congregations haven't been able to really invest themselves on rooftop on-site solar, either because their building isn't appropriate or they are unable financially to invest in an on-site system that meets their needs. So people are really excited about this idea of being able to invest in a community solar array so that they can, in fact, become carbon neutral. So we have a number of congregations that have committed to becoming carbon neutral by 2030. And so this is one way that they would be able to reach those goals.
So one of the things I was curious about in terms of the faith-based approach, and something that you mention in on your website and it's part of your value statement, is this notion of serving folks with lower credit scores. In fact, I think you talk about something like half of Minnesotans have a credit score of under 700, which is only important insofar as the fact that most solar developers are looking for the folks who have the scores that are higher than that. And so how is Interfaith Power and Light and your approach to community solar? You have this phrase, just community solar. How is that an approach that's going to help serve low-income residents?
Yeah. Well, I want to say that, there are many things that people in faith communities are concerned about. By definition, faith communities have come together because they're hoping to serve a greater moral end. So there are faith actors who are concerned about economic justice, about hunger, about, violence in the home, and then, of course, about environmental sustainability. Unfortunately, oftentimes those issues have been siloed into, different communities and different conversations within that faith community. And what's exciting about community solar is that it's been an opportunity for us to talk about both economic justice and carbon mitigation at the same time. So one of the things that as we started to look into community solar, this amazing thing, as you said, tons of applications for solar in Xcel territory have come in. I think of it sort of as a bonanza of, energy development, solar energy development. Unfortunately, when you look at the details, it's clear that it's going to be available for people who can pay up front, which is great, except for, I don't have $10,000, sitting around waiting to invest in this. Or it's going to be available to people who have a really creditworthy history. We can look at the situation and say that means that many people are going to be left out. So we have challenged the community, solar development community, to help us think through how are we going to be able to sit in a fellowship hall and offer a pay-as-you-go subscription to community solar and not have to come back the next week and say, oh, looks like you've been accepted and I'm sorry, but you've been declined. We don't want to be in a position where there are haves and have-nots in the community solar world. So it's a challenging and exciting problem to be working on.
Absolutely. So your background includes several years as a lead convener for Minnesota 350 and group fighting climate change at the state level. Do you find that fights easier with God on your side?
That's a great question.
my real question is, you know, that Interfaith Power and Light says that community solar is not just about expanding access to solar, but should also marry solar with economic equity. You know, is there something that you feel like other community solar developers are overlooking? Is it really just what we talked about in terms of giving access to those who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to participate?
Mm-hmm. Let me answer sort of the first part of the question first, and then I'll go on to the second part. First of all, I just want to say, give a big shout out to the work that Minnesota 350 is doing, mobilizing people around the climate movement. What's exciting about Minnesota IPL for me is that we have an opportunity to really leverage the already existing community power of these faith institutions. So you saw in the civil rights movement, you see in many social movements, when congregations get involved, they bring energy that helps to move things along. So it's exciting to work both with organizations like Minnesota 350, who are doing it in the larger secular world, but also to see how that comes alive in faith communities.
So I was interested, you know, speaking of kind of practical ways that people can be involved, figuring out that model for how community solar can really, you know, as you mentioned, sort of this notion of just community solar. I read on your website about a project in Northfield where there's going to be a community organization that will help refer residents to the project, and the referral fees that they get from the solar developer will be used to help make it more accessible for low-income participants. You also have, I have right in front of me the flyer from about the Shiloh Temple Community Solar Garden, which it looks like will not only be trying to get a lot of participation from the members of that faith community, but also be working on a job training program that will involve actual members of the community being able to be participating in constructing that project. Do you see either one of those as sort of models that you hope to replicate, encompass sort of the various components you see as essential to having just community gardens?
So there's a lot of ways to start thinking about creating access to community solar. And there have been a lot of exciting models out there. So we're spending quite a bit of time thinking through what other people have done. In Northfield, they're actually using money that has been allocated from the developer for marketing of the array, and they're putting that into a fund to make sure that a certain percentage of the shares are given to low-income people. That's exciting. We are trying to figure out sort of systemically, how can we make it a sort of replicable, scalable model in which it's not the norm for a financier to be looking at the credit scores of the individual enrollees or subscribers to the array. And so we'd like to have that be sort of available to everybody. So it's not a pool of, you know, a small pool of people that are getting access, but that it's a, you know, access to anybody who, you know, is first in line. It's a tricky problem. One of the ways that we're thinking about this is, you know, faith communities have, you know, wealthy folks. They have folks with lower income and lower credit scores. How can we put together a package with the developer and sell it to a financier that will sort of use the power of the good credit scores and the upfront subscription buyers in that congregation to mitigate the risk and lower the risk so that we can, you know, always have available pay-as-you-go shares to people who don't have the same credit score. But I want to make it clear that, you know, giving away solar power and making it accessible to people to pay for it, regardless of their history, are two different sort of social benefits, right? Mm-hmm. We're not actually proposing a model where we are, you know, donating shares to people. We're asking everybody to get on board and subscribe to solar array. We are really blessed to be in a sort of economic place in Minnesota where in Excel territory we can create models where everybody who signs up today pays a small enrollment fee is going to start saving money on their electric bill immediately. By becoming an enrollee of this array. So, you know, why wouldn't you sign up? Right. So, you know, low income, high income, doesn't matter. Everybody should have access to be able to start saving money on their electric bill. But, you know, the trick, of course, is making sure that we can get the financial support to be able to build these arrays in such a way that that's possible.
You know, it's really interesting. I couldn't help but think, in sort of exposing sort of my nerdy interest in other policies, that, you know, what you described in terms of not only the contrast between the notion of donating solar and purchasing solar, you know, for example, there's a group, I think it's called the Renewable Energy Alliance, that's been working in northern Minnesota, essentially trying to replace energy assistance programs with solar and saying, why, instead of paying people every year to help them with their energy bills, which we do for a very good reason, why not help them do solar so that we don't need to give them assistance anymore? So in that sense, a donation model could work for people who are particularly poor and particularly struggle with their energy costs. But the other thing, in terms of sort of the phrase kept coming to mind, pooling risk, you know, it's mm-hmm. sort of like the health insurance market. The whole idea was that, before Obamacare, was that you have a bunch of people who don't have insurance and can't afford it. And on the individual market, they are scored in such a way that it's hard for them to get insurance. And now you create these big pools of people where the healthy people help underwrite the not so healthy folks. And that same kind of model, sort of like, do we need community solar insurance? I don't know.
We spend tons of time. We have a working group that's specifically trying to get our hands around this problem of risk mitigation and access to finances for socially just community solar arrays. And so we talk about that question all the time. And I think that one of the ways to mitigate risk is to have a diversified income stream of people who are subscribers. So that's pretty big. We actually have been talking about having a different model, which is that we actually set up the subscription system so that if somebody defaults from the array, people are paying every month towards the array, and if they lose their job, they can't continue to pay. What would it look like to have a faith community be the backup subscriber? So somebody mm-hmm. misses 1 month of payment. We've already got a faith community. So Shiloh Temple has, for example, signed up to be a backup subscriber. They've already bought into part of their array for themselves, so they're already in the system. And the subscription simply gets moved from person X to the temple mm-hmm. while they get their finances together. Maybe they have 6 months to, re-enroll and take their share back from the faith community. Sure. But if they don't, then the next person on the waiting list is given an opportunity to enroll. This is something that hasn't been done before. So we have to convince the financiers that this has mitigated their risk.
Right.
So that's one option. The other option is to have what we call a loan loss reserve fund. So we, would certainly be happy to take donations from foundations or from faith communities to, if we had a pool in the bank that said, we're going to have a pool of risky investors. But don't worry, because we have $100,000 sitting here that we will be replenishing, because we'll have a small amount of everybody's subscription go into replenishing the risk pool, the loan loss reserve fund. And then people will be able to, if somebody defaults, the loan loss reserve fund will cover their subscription for a month or two, and then we'll revert to the next person on the waiting list to get that share. So that's another option about how to mitigate the risk. I just think it's philosophically really important to think about the difference between charity and setting up a sustainable economic system that works for people of low income. Mm-hmm. And we're really working on setting up an economic system that is accessible to everybody and will understand that people have bumps and turns in their roads, and that we can create a system that will work for them to be part of, that isn't about shame, and it's expecting that we're going to have a certain amount of people default because of the nature of the financial world that we live in.
Right. So I want to take this up a level. A couple of years ago, we had a podcast interview with Joy Hughes from the Solar Garden Institute out in Colorado about what she called a community solar gold standard. And she was touting Colorado's law, community solar law, for its attention to low-income participation and the fact that it had higher payment rates for smaller projects. So now Minnesota's program is obviously very new. There's still ongoing discussion at the regulatory level about the program rules and whatnot. Do you see anything sort of, right up front where you feel like that program could be improved, especially in terms of creating access for low-income participants? Mm-hmm. Or is it sort of too early to tell?
Well, I unfortunately would argue that it's not the gold standard mm-hmm. because Colorado's system, there was basically a low-income carve-out in the system. 5% of every developer's array had to be given to low-income people. Mm-hmm. But given is the operant term. So it was essentially a charity model. And the the low-income carve-out was on the back of the developer to fund that. It was sort of part of doing business, was making sure that you reserve 5% to give it away to low-income people. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the way that they gave it away is that they would identify, you know, one or two social service agencies, and they say, tell us, you know, all of your people who are poor, let's get them some of this solar. And so they would. And so a small group of people in a small development would get solar. Well, good for them. But it didn't actually work to mitigate poverty or build a new economic system.
No, to be fair, she wasn't referring to Colorado, and maybe I misspoke. She wasn't saying that Colorado's law was the gold standard, but we were speaking more broadly about what is the gold standard, and she mentioned the low-income piece of Colorado's law as something that was good, but that's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if she was aware, or maybe she was aware and simply has a different perspective on that charitable model. But,
right.
But I appreciate what you're saying, that the issue here is not about how do we simply give solar to low-income folks, but how do we create an economic model that has them participating, but that everybody's benefiting from.
Yep. And I guess I will mention the second part of our understanding of justice, which is to say, if we're going to create real economic justice, we need to think about the way that opportunities have grown in people's lives and in people's families throughout history. And understand that Minnesota is a state where we have significant disparities among different groups of people in terms of access to jobs. So when we saw the economy recover after the previous recession, people of color were much less likely to be part of the, you know, newly created jobs. So we're interested in making sure that as we enter this sort of bonanza of building and development, that historically marginalized communities have access to those jobs. The question, so people will say, you know, we would love to hire people of color, but there aren't, you know, available resources. We can't find people of color to do these jobs.
That are qualified.
That's right. And it's complicated because one of the things that has recently come from the Department of Commerce or the Department of Labor and Industry is that you actually have to have a certified electrician's license in order to be a solar installer. So you can have two apprentices for every one certified electrician on the job. So that's already sort of reduced the opportunities for people who haven't had an opportunity to get a two-year degree and a, you know, an electrician journeyman's license. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who are those other two people on the job? We're working with Jemez Staples and Renewable Energy Partners to try to train people in a way that we know the solar installers are looking for. So we were actually having conversations with the installers and saying, what are you looking for in the workforce? We'll make sure that people are trained and ready in a way that will be attractive to you. And so we're going to be working with the Midwest Renewable Energy Association in order to create first a weekend training program and then probably a series of additional trainings that will start to employ people of color to start installing these arrays. So, of course, the first project we'll be working on is at Shiloh Temple in North Minneapolis. So Jemez is going to be running a training program this summer. We already have a commitment that those people who are trained in that program will be able to be the installers of the Shiloh array. But we're hoping that that won't be the end, that they will be, you know, employed to put up, you know, hundreds of arrays in Minnesota.
So, speaking of political questions, mm-hmm. one sort of, I guess, in some ways tangential, but in some ways not tangential to this question of justice, there is a lot of history in a lot of different trades, unions playing a lot of that role in terms of apprenticing folks and getting them the job training skills mm-hmm. and then helping them get jobs. Are unions playing a role at all in this? And could they play a role in this? You know, I know that a lot of the electrical work that's out there mm-hmm. is unionized, at least the utility workers, for example, mm-hmm. And are there opportunities there?
Yeah.
Could there be?
We want to have well-trained electricians who are being given a living wage and are being valued. And so for all those reasons, working with the electrical unions is a really important opportunity. I think that, the question about, you know, who is legally allowed to be on what job site is a very political question. And we hope that, you know, the unions will really take seriously this idea that, you know, being able to work with people who maybe have less formal education but are very qualified to be on those job sites, that they will start to integrate that into the model in which they work.
So let's say it's 3 years from now, it's 2018. You're looking back. What do you see as the accomplishments for Interfaith Power and Light around community solar?
I love to talk about this, and I think about this all the time. We're starting out with one project in North Minneapolis, 230-kilowatt project. So in 3 years, I'm hoping that that array will be generating power for somewhere between 50 and 70 households, that we can tell the story of how workforce development and training has led to a group of sustainably employed people from that neighborhood, and that they can look back to the Shiloh project as the place where they sort of cut their teeth in the work. But of course, we don't want to stop there. You know, we're excited to have faith-based arrays all over the Twin Cities. So we'd love to see some arrays coming through denominations. So we could imagine, for example, working with a group of Episcopalians and having, you know, a megawatt that would be divided among, you know, maybe 10 churches. And each of those churches has gotten enough energy to power their entire congregational structure. And their congregants have also been given the opportunity to buy into that array. We'd love to see people working in interfaith groups. We're just beginning a conversation with some folks in St. Paul about having an interfaith array, so having a mosque and a synagogue and a couple of churches get together and create an array together. We think that one of the best ways to start having a, you know, truly open-minded interfaith conversation is to have a real project to work on together. So we hope that Community Solar will give people the opportunity to not only think about carbon mitigation, but also about economic justice, and to give them an opportunity to meet some of the people that maybe they, in their minds, have been thinking about being part of the movement together, but now they're, you know, sitting around the table together and learning to joke and learning to make financial spreadsheets together. And so, you know, thinking about community solar from the perspective of sort of democratic leadership. We're really excited to be working with one developer, Cooperative Energy Futures, which has actually been developed as a cooperative. So by definition, the folks who subscribe to the arrays are the owners of that company. So just thinking about that as, you know, an interfaith concept, you know, if we have a group of churches and mosques and synagogues together, you know, as owners of this development company, it's a really exciting proposition. And I want to make sure that I just say a word about the process that we've gone through. So we looked at, you know, this incredible solar market that was, you know, coming onto the scene in Minnesota. And we asked ourselves, you know, how can we improve on this in terms of justice? And so we have a team that got together and said, what are the values that we really want to promote? And I'm just going to say quickly what they are. We would like these panels to, you know, really truly create inclusive and egalitarian and diverse social and economic partnerships, that the arrays value the natural environment as much as the human environment. So one of our goals is to have a lot of arrays on rooftops, because that's otherwise underutilized space. We want to make sure that it's promoting local economic growth, that it's building economic development opportunities for marginalized communities. And lastly, just that as we start to think about solar, that we think about it as really a paradigm shift, so that people can start thinking about the energy that they use as something that they have ownership in. So it's not just turning on a light switch and turning it off and paying your bill, that in fact it's something that you had a part in designing. And so we think it is important for each community to get together and figure out what they want their array to look like. Where do they want it to be? How do they want the shares to be distributed? What are the mechanisms through which they're going to create economic opportunity for everybody? We may need to employ dozens of different models in different congregations, depending on how those congregations are economically set up. So, you know, one of the roles that Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light and the Just Community Solar team can play is to really just be recording the stories of these partnerships that are emerging. So, you know, somebody over here was able to get a loan loss reserve fund through their, you know, some fund that's sitting at their church. Another congregation maybe can't do that because they don't have money. So how are they going to do that? Well, they're going to work with a business partner from their community who's going to, you know, help them to mitigate that risk. So there's many different ways to do it, and we're hoping that we can have, you know, a real collection of rich stories about how faith communities have helped move economic justice forward. So I want to say, so Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, we engage many different faith actors, people who are excited about practical solutions, people who are excited about public policy and, you know, joining with hundreds of thousands of people in the street. We have people who are much more apt to, you know, be thinking about what are the prayers and the songs and the relationships that we can build to create a vibrant climate justice movement. We're really hoping that community solar can be a place where people can use all three of those, you know, pieces of this, parts of the three-legged stool, the legs of the three-legged stool. Think about community solar gardens as an opportunity to, on the ground, build a incredible carbon mitigation tool that they can go look at and see and celebrate together. But we also want them to make sure that they understand that this is, you know, the fact that we have community solar in Minnesota is because people have worked hard in the political arena to create the atmosphere and the and the regulatory tools that make it possible. So we want people to pay attention to that. We want our solar proponents to also be political actors. And at the end of the day, this is a spirit-led work. And we want people to celebrate the fact that we're at a place in human history where we've been able to work together in order to create something really beautiful. And that that's, you know, for many people of faith, something that they feel like is God-given. So, you know, what are the spiritual roots of the work that they're doing? That they take a deep breath and step back and think about how they care for other people, how they care for the earth in a grounded and spiritual way.
So if people listening to this are really taken with this notion of just community solar, where can they find out more?
Well, we would love to engage. Certainly you can go to our website, mnipl.org. We have a solar team meeting about every 2 weeks. You can find out when and where on our calendar. And keep your eye on what's happening with the Shiloh Array. We're going to be having a community meeting next Thursday, June 23rd. People are welcome to come out and, you know, learn what it's all about. And hopefully we're going to have some fabulous opportunities for people to buy into some of these arrays, to become subscribers to some of these arrays. So again, check back frequently.
That was Julie Nurbin, Executive Director of Interfaith Power and Light, talking to John Farrell, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance's Director of Democratic Energy. More information about community solar gardens and other solar goods can be found on ilsr.org, where you can also find more Local Energy Rules podcasts. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.